It's 4:06. You're listening to Central Time here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Rob Ferret. My co-host Veronica Rickert is off today. Coming up, state parks will have free admission this weekend, plus there's free fishing and more around the state. We want to hear about your favorite state parks and other outdoor recreation. First, the UW system has been one of the most controversial parts of the state budget this time around. The latest step from the Joint Finance Committee, a cut of $250 million system-wide. That's instead of the $300 million proposed by the governor. And an end to state laws on things like tenure and shared governance. Our next guest is waving the caution flag for lawmakers. In a recent opinion piece, he says the UW-Madison has built up a world-class reputation for more than a century to the benefit of the state as a whole, and major changes, he's worried, could put an end to that. John Wiley is a former chancellor at UW-Madison. He joins us here in the studio. John, thanks for coming up.
Thanks for having me, Rob.
So you write that when people from outside of the state think of Wisconsin, they think of three things: the cheese, the Packers, and UW-Madison. Why does the university have that kind of recognition?
Well, I can't really answer that, but I spent a lot of time during my years in administration traveling around the country, visiting with alumni groups and with other people, foundations and donors and people from around the country. And it was very clear that there weren't many things they knew about Wisconsin except those three.
So for a lot of people maybe in the state who didn't go to UW-Madison, who didn't send their kids here, they might think, yeah, okay, nice that we have that reputation. How does that help me? What's the benefit for the state as a whole of having this prominent university on the world stage?
Well, there are a lot of benefits. Directly, economically, one of the things we've done here in Madison is build up our research park, which now is home to nearly 120 companies, pays millions of dollars a year in property taxes to the city. That we did by our own bootstraps. We had no help from the city, the county, or the state to do that. We had help from MG&E, and we sold some land to CUNA to get it started, but now it's generating revenue back to the university. So that's one example. We've spun out way more than 300 companies that are employing thousands of people around the state. We're a source of innovation and new companies. Those are direct, dollar for dollar, in fact, many dollars per dollar, return to the on investment for the state taxpayers.
So looking back at the history a little bit, you raised the question, how did little Wisconsin end up in such elite company in terms of universities? We're, in boxing terms, punching above our weight, I think they say. How did we get from the 19th century to now with this elite institution?
Well, Rob, I spent a lot of time thinking about that, and you don't have enough time for me to explain it in great detail, but I will tell you that one advantage was starting in 1848. So we're old by U.S. university standards. Getting an early start was a big help. Secondly, right from the get-go, in the state law, it was the rules of governance of the institution were written down. And we were able to attract the very best faculty from the very beginning of the university. We got the best in the world. Academic administrators have a saying, because faculty hire each other, departments hire their colleagues. We say A faculty hire other A's, whereas B faculty hire C's. If you think about that, that's either a prescription to stay on top, or it's a prescription to spiral downward. And it can work both ways. So we got an early start with absolutely superb faculty, and they have insisted on hiring nothing else but superb colleagues. And I'm very worried that if we eliminate tenure and shared governance, and it isn't just faculty governance, it's shared governance. We written into the statutes was a role for the academic staff and the classified staff and the students. And I'll tell you, from experience, there is no chancellor, and that certainly includes me, smart enough to make all the right decisions without consulting with the faculty, the academic staff, the classified staff, and the students. You really need to take all those viewpoints into account when making important decisions.
Talking to former chancellor of UW-Madison, John Wiley, looking at a little bit about the history of UW-Madison and his concerns over the current budget process, what could change. He thinks it'll jeopardize the reputation, the quality of UW-Madison. Let's dig into those concerns a little more. Why is shared governance? Why is tenure so important? Because a lot of people think, my workplace doesn't have that. So most workplaces don't have that. What is it about universities that make that kind of governance and something like tenure so relevant and important? As
well,
you
say? I'll answer the question I'm sure you're asking first, and then I'll answer the question that is really behind it. It's very important for faculty to be free to pursue wherever their research takes them. The establishment of academic freedom in U.S. universities traces back to the late 1800s and Wisconsin, when the legislature ordered the regents to fire Professor Richard Ely on the grounds that he was teaching socialism. As a matter of fact, he was opposed to socialism. He was not teaching socialism. He was teaching about the labor movement, which was a hot topic then. But they ordered the regents to fire him, and the regents did an investigation and then announced to the legislature that not only are we not going to fire him, we're going to reaffirm his right to do what he's doing. And they issued the famous sifting and winnowing statement that I believe was written by President Charles Van Hise at the time. You know, the one that's on the front of Bascom Hall and that probably most students can quote directly. Mm-hmm. That was the beginning of academic freedom. Faculty need to be able to do and say controversial things in order to do their work. And they need to do it in the secure knowledge that they won't be fired just because someone doesn't like what they're saying. So that was the fundamental reason for establishing tenure in the first place. As it's evolved, though, that's not the most important thing that it does. Most faculty that I know couldn't care less about job security. They just don't care because they are such hot commodities on the job market. They can leave overnight and get an equally good job at higher pay at an equally good university. So it doesn't matter to them. But what does matter is picking really great colleagues. And when you vote to promote someone to tenure, that's a very consequential decision. You take it seriously. You spend a lot of time examining their work, examining them, and making sure that this is someone you want as a faculty colleague for the rest of your career. If you could hire someone that could be fired next week, you wouldn't take it seriously. You just say, well, it doesn't matter. If we don't like what they're doing, we'll just fire them. That's why tenure is important.
There's been concern before this budget cycle about faculty poaching from the UW-Madison. Big names going elsewhere where they have more that they can offer. And there's concern we've heard from professors saying, hey, maybe I'm going to pack up and leave now. Are you worried if these changes stand as written right now that we'll see a small or even major exodus of faculty away?
Of course I'm worried about it. I always worried about it. All the time I was chancellor, before that even. It's always something to worry about because it's an open market out there, and it's a very ferociously competitive market. We hire from the best schools in the world, and they hire from us, and it goes on all the time. But right now, we look vulnerable to the rest of the country, and I think there is a lot of poaching being attempted. And I've heard from a number of faculty who have told me in emails in the last few days that they're thinking about looking around, because Wisconsin's environment just does not seem compatible with their career anymore. That's a very worrying situation to be in.
Now, one of the arguments we've seen lately in favor of some form of changes to the way the university is run, whether it's a public authority as originally proposed by the governor or these changes we're talking about now, is that management needs more flexibility in this day and age, whether we're talking about the chancellors or of the various schools, the director of the system, the regents. Do you see any case to be made? You used to be the boss in this position. Was there flexibility that would have made your job easier, made you more able to improve the university?
Absolutely. But it has nothing to do with tenure or any of the changes that are being proposed. I mean, we chafe under a lot of the rules that are imposed by the State Department of Administration. Personnel rules, sometimes. Building and construction rules. All sorts of rules and regulations. One time I flowcharted the process to change a person's title, to upgrade their title of their job. It was 30 pages long. And there was a box at the bottom that said, if you've gotten this far and more than 3 years have elapsed, start over. Now that is an unruly process. Building and construction, we spend twice as much money and twice as long as anybody in the private sector would spend building a new building. There are all kinds of efficiencies to be realized there. None of that has anything to do with tenure or with the authority of chancellors to fire faculty. None of it.
And we've made it this far, and I haven't actually asked you about the budget cut, currently standing at $250 million for the system as a whole. UW-Madison will own a part of those cuts, certainly. They've seen, the system has seen cuts on that scale before. Is this something, a straw that breaks the camel's back, as you see it?
Well, we'll find out, won't we? I'll tell you what worries me most about it is tuition. When I went to school back in the 60s, okay, it's a long time ago, it's before you were born, tuition as a rule of thumb around the country at public universities, state universities, was between 1% and 2% of median family income. My dad made $10,000 a year at the peak of his career as a pharmacist. My tuition as an undergraduate was $125 a year. Today, our tuition at UW-Madison is $9,000. That's about 1.5% of $750,000. How many families do you know that make that much money? We are freezing pretty much everybody out of the option to get a college education at all. That is outrageous. That is disastrously bad public policy, and we keep doing it year after year. This is not the first big budget cut UW-Madison has had, or the university system has had. It's the fifth out of the last six biennia, and it ties the biggest one we ever had before. So there comes a point when it is the straw that breaks the camel's back. I don't know where that is. I know that the state, when I first came here in 1975 on the faculty, the state was providing something like a third to 40% of our budget. It's now down, if you take out the part that never even touches our coffers, the part that's debt service and so on, take that out, the state is providing less than 10% of our budget. The biggest single chunk is federal. Second biggest is gifts and grants from alumni and foundations. The third biggest is program revenue, which is money we get for selling things like dormitory space, football tickets, and so on. The next is tuition, and the smallest is the state. In what sense will we be a state university when that gets down to near zero?
Now, you wrote this piece. It's available on Madison.com, presumably because you hope somebody's going to listen. Do you think that the Republicans in the legislature who are running the budget show right now are going to listen, are going to change any of these things?
Some of them do. I know I have a reputation for being rather combative. A lot of people who have written letters to the editor have said, yeah, this is just Wiley sounding off again. I speak my mind. I'm pretty candid and blunt. I admit that. Not always very politically or diplomatically sensitive. But I always found the legislature to be just as varied as the rest of society. Some people would not listen. They had their minds made up, and there was nothing you could say that would educate them or inform them or in any way change their opinions. Others listened very carefully and said, well, you make a good point. We'll see what we can do about that. And that goes for both sides of the aisle, Republican and Democrat. So many of them were very reasonable to deal with, and I think many of them will listen to reasoned arguments now in this environment. Maybe we can still make some changes in the magnitude of the cut and in the governance changes, which I think are even more disastrous than the dollar cut. But it remains to be seen. We'll see how it goes.
John, thanks for joining us today.
You're very welcome. Thank you.
That was John Wiley, former chancellor at UW-Madison, talking about the state budget and changes to higher education. Coming up, it's free fun weekend this Saturday and Sunday, a chance to get outside in nature. After the long winter, try out a new Wisconsin State Parker Trail for free. We're asking you to call in now. What is your favorite state park? Where do you go every year as a family, to camp or fish? Call us with your favorite state park or trail at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or post on the Central Time Facebook page. First, this weekend is free fun weekend for Wisconsin State Parks, trails, forests, fishing, and more. It's a chance to get out there and enjoy all the great outdoor stuff. Maybe you were dreaming through the winter of doing it without a daily user fee or state park sticker. So we want to hear from you now. What is your favorite state hiking trail, your go-to place for sunset over a great lake? Where do you go when you want absolute quiet? Where do you take the kids for a hike or take them fishing? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can also post on the Central Time Facebook page. We'll go right to our callers now. We've got Pat on the line in Grafton. Pat, hi.
Hi. One of the nicest parks is in Whitefish Dunes in Door County. It's adjacent to one of the county parks, which that never does have any admission. But there are beautiful walking trails in the woods, and as the name implies, beautiful dunes, a lakefront that's good for swimming and building a sandcastle. And also there are some model Native American homes. This was the Whitefish Dunes at Lakefront area was the summer base for the group, the nation that lived there. And some years ago, a troop of Boy Scouts put together some traditional homes and so on. So it's a good place for some quiet. It's a good place for some fun. And they have an educators program. It's a good place to bring your kids.
So some nature and some history there.
Exactly. Yep.
Great. Well, Pat, thank you so much for starting us off with that recommendation. You can join with yours, a favorite state park, state trail, place to go fishing on the eve of free fun weekend. Call 800-642-1234. That reminds me of a park just south of Sheboygan. It's got dunes. I can't remember the name. A caller had recommended it once, and I went there, and it was great. Hopefully somebody will maybe call in and tell Judith the name of that park. We'll go now to Quinn in Muscadet. Quinn, hi.
Hi. I like going to Devil's Lake State Park.
Oh, yeah.
For the hiking and fishing and paddleboarding.
Okay, and do you, I've done all of that. Do you get up on the rocks, too, and do any rock climbing there? I see a lot of people doing that all the time.
Yeah, my family does it every Labor Day weekend.
Well, see, maybe you could talk me into trying that, Quinn. I am a chicken. I haven't done it. I get nervous watching other people do it. Is it pretty safe?
It's fun. Kind of, you got to be careful.
Okay, and have you been out yet so far this year?
No, I have not.
Okay, well, thank you so much, Quinn. Yeah, Devil's Lake, definitely a classic. We were staying in Baraboo a couple weekends ago. We were going to go, but the right day we were going to go, it was just raining insanely all day long. So we've missed Devil's Lake so far this year, but we'll have more opportunities. Next, we go to Laura in Appleton. Laura, hi, you're on the air.
Hi, thank you. I would definitely go to High Cliff State Park because of the Niagara Escarpment. And it's on the beautiful shores of Lake Winnebago. And the Effigy Mounds are amazing there.
Oh, it's always great to catch some mounds at the state parks around the state. So have you been up there yet this year, Laura?
I have. I go almost weekly.
So you're, well, in Appleton, of course. That's your backyard pretty much, right?
It is. It is.
All right. Well, thank you so much, Laura. We are taking your calls. It's free fun weekend for Wisconsin State Parks. Want to hear your favorite state park, state trail, place to go fishing. That's going to be free this weekend at a lot of state parks. Call in now at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or you can post on the Central Time Facebook page. We have an answer. Clearing up my faulty memory, Kohler Andre was the park up by Sheboygan. Really nice, a very manageable outing. Not a huge place, but a nice trail along the lake shore. Kind of unique, as it was described, their unique flora and, well, mostly flora, a little bit of fauna. Plants, right? Flora. So that's definitely worth a quick visit. Kohler Andre Park by Sheboygan. We'll hear from you now, 800-642-1234. And we've got Jake on the line in Madison. Jake, hi.
Hey, guys. I love going up to Devil's Lake to do top roping and rock climbing. And the best way to do that is you go to the South Shore and go up the CCC Trail.
Uh-huh.
And actually, the Chicago Climbing Club goes up there every Saturday and sets up, I think, like 20 to 30 climbs. There's ropes just there. You just check the tie-off system, and you can climb away.
And is that, do they have people there spotting you, or do you have to bring your own buddy to spot you going up?
Well, you have to have a belaying partner, but you can always just find somebody and ask them for a belay.
Okay.
So a belaying is a person that you connect the rope to yourself, and then the person on the bottom has the rope, and they control the rope going up and down. So.
All right. So depend on the kindness of strangers there. Jake, thanks for that suggestion. Sometimes that CCC trail, the fall, dry leaves, if you don't have good boots on, that can be a little harrowing in and of itself. Fred is, Kristen is with us next in Madison. Fred, we'll get to you next. Kristen, hi.
Hi. I just discovered in the last year or so I have small children. And there's
You just discovered the small children?
No, I have small children.
Okay.
And I've just discovered in the last year or so that New Glarus Woods State Park has an amazing playset.
Oh, okay.
Unbelievable. It's like rainbow playset times five. And they also have wonderful hiking trails that even the kids can manage.
Oh, that is fantastic. New Glarus Woods State Park, a good one for kids. Thank you so much, Kristen. We've got Fred next now in Madison. Fred, hi.
Hello.
Hi, you're on the air, Fred.
Hi. I lived in Manitowoc for quite a while and used to take the kids up to Point Beach State Park. It's even nicer than Terry Andry. And then just outside of the park, there's a bird sanctuary to watch, and the camping facilities at Point Beach are great. So you might want to try that, too.
Another fantastic suggestion, Fred. Thanks. Thanks for all of your ideas. You can keep them coming. Great state parks to share over at the Central Time Facebook page. After months of negotiations, Governor Scott Walker announced earlier this afternoon a funding plan for a new Milwaukee Bucks arena complex in downtown Milwaukee. The deal includes a 50-50 split between public and private funding, with $250 million coming from taxpayers, the other $250 million coming from current and former owners of the team. Under threats that the NBA team could leave Milwaukee, Walker made the argument that it would cost the state more money to lose him than it would be to invest in a new arena. He was flanked by a Republican leadership, Milwaukee Mayor Tom Barrett, and County Executive Chris Abley when he made the announcement. Here's what he had to say.
The fact is, if we do nothing, that revenue goes away. We have a huge hole. We have a cost to the state of $419 million. And what our hope was, we could find a way to make an investment that had a greater return than the investment we put in.
Here with us now to talk about the details and the remaining questions, we have WPR State Capitol reporter Sean Johnson. Sean, good to have you back.
Hey, thanks for having me.
So break it down, the key details of this deal, please.
Yeah, I would say the key details are very similar to what the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel was reporting last week, in that the state's share of this deal would be significantly lower than what the governor initially proposed when he called for a Bucks arena deal before he even announced his budget. So he was talking about $220 million worth of bonding. It now looks like the state's direct costs would be a $55 million worth of bonds that would rise to $80 million over the course of over the life of those bonds. The deal gets a little bit complicated in other elements. So the city of Milwaukee would contribute $47 million through a new parking structure, and the county of Milwaukee would contribute its share through its uncollected debt. That is, they would issue these bonds on behalf of the county, and the county would pay off those bonds by this debt that people owe the county right now. So these can be court costs, for example. This is debt that the county is having trouble collecting now, and it's going to turn that over to the state and say, you know, state of Wisconsin, you collect this debt, and that's our share. So that's really that's a tricky part of the deal that I think a lot of lawmakers have questions about at this point. And the other part of this deal is that some taxes that are happening right now in Milwaukee for a variety of purposes on rental cars, hotels, those were set to expire. They would be extended under this deal. So, whether or not that is a new tax is in the eye of the beholder. The governor's take is it's not a new tax. Those are taxes that are there already. We're just extending them. So it's different than creating a tax just for the Bucks.
So this is a deal, but it is not a done deal, right? Legislators have to sign off on this still.
No, I mean, you had the governor in the governor's conference room stand up flanked by Milwaukee Mayor Tom Barrett, who ran against him for governor twice. So obviously they have different opinions on many issues. Milwaukee County Executive Chris Abele, and then the Republican leaders of the state legislature, Scott Fitzgerald and Robin Voss, along with a handful of rank-and-file lawmakers behind them. So the stakeholders in this have agreed in the state's, or the public share of this arena deal. Getting those votes is not going to be an easy issue, though. There are a lot of lawmakers who are just fundamentally opposed to the idea of the state subsidizing a sports team here. I mean, you got to remember the Bucks owners are who are going to profit off this deal. They are contributing $150 million. Some of them are the nation's wealthiest people. And so they're paying $150 million. Former owner, former senator Herb Kohl is contributing another $100 million. And so they're paying for half the costs. And there are lawmakers out there who say, we shouldn't be in the business of paying the other half.
Talking to WPR State Capitol reporter Sean Johnson about this proposed deal announced today, brought a bunch of parties to the table trying to figure out the public financing side of a new Milwaukee Bucks arena aimed at keeping the team in the state. Now, Sean, one objection I'd heard from lawmakers, maybe we'll call them in the middle, saying maybe some money from the state, but we want to see a bigger share. We want more skin in the game from the city and the county. Is this deal, do you think, geared towards satisfying those objections?
Yeah, definitely. Robin Voss was sort of leading the charge on that. We need more from the city and county argument. I mean, that was something he said over and over and over again. And he stood up and completely embraced this deal at the press conference and has really kind of turned around on these Bucks negotiations ever since the sides began meeting and kind of being public about the fact that they were meeting. Robin Voss says that if he's adopting the same argument that the governor made. And the governor's argument, they had plastered to the podium or the lectern where they were speaking. Cheaper to keep them. That is basically their argument behind this Bucks deal, is that they're not trying to say... their primary argument is not that this is going to be a great economic driver for the state. Their primary argument is, if the Bucks leave, we're going to lose all this tax revenue. And if we lose all this tax revenue, that's a hole in the budget. So Voss is up there saying, I think this is fair. He thinks the state's share is relatively small. Whether or not his members feel the same way remains to be seen. I think a lot of them want to see more details, because remember, the numbers we're seeing right now have all been produced by the administration, by the stakeholders who want this deal. This is not a deal that's been kind of run through the number crunchers at the nonpartisan Legislative Fiscal Bureau, who often find things that lawmakers and governors would rather they don't find.
Now, another issue I've heard brought up is, how is this going to be approved? Is it going to stay in the budget? That's where the governor, I believe, initially put it. But I've heard some Republicans want to take it out of the budget, have a separate vote, in part to make Democrats show where they stand on this issue.
That is very much an open question at this point, is how are they going to go about this? And among people who really want to see this Bucks deal done, and, you know, just... give you one example. I talked with one Milwaukee Democrat after the press conference, Mandela Barnes, and he said, you know, he's a little worried about the Bucks deal coming out of the budget. For one, he says, you're talking about a lot of money. So this is something that ought to be in there to begin with. And again, Representative Barnes is somebody who wants to see the Bucks stay in Milwaukee, in his city. But the other concern he has is that if you take it out of the budget, it doesn't get passed. I mean, you put governors have historically, and legislators have historically, put kind of thorny, difficult issues in the budget because it increases their chances of passage. You know, if you're in the majority party, if you want to vote against the Bucks deal, you have to vote against the rest of the budget. So that's where things go that are tough to pass. It's very much an open question at this point whether the Bucks deal stays in there, though. There are a lot of rank-and-file lawmakers who say they want to see it as a standalone bill.
One more detail. I don't think we got into cost overruns. There was some kind of commitment as to who has to pick up. And you know, when there's construction, there's often overruns. Where does that fall in this deal?
Yeah, that was a detail that was announced today as part of this deal. I don't think was reported last week by the paper. And the point that they're making today is that the cost overruns would be covered by the owners. So the state's obligation to this project would be $250 million. Again, that number would grow with interest. So, you know, think of $250 million as sort of the asking price for a house. So that's what the state's going to pay. It doesn't account for all the interest that they're going to pay down the road. But it sounds like the state won't pay cost overruns. The flip side of that is it sounds like the owners might get the naming rights. And so, you know, whatever corporation they were to sell the naming rights to name the Buck Stadium, that revenue from that sale would go to them and not to the public.
Sean, you mentioned this is a deal that didn't go through the analysis of the Legislative Fiscal Bureau. Do we know yet if the LFB, the Fiscal Bureau, is going to get a crack at this before somebody votes on it, whether it's joint finance or the legislature at large?
I think probably yes. I mean, I guess I wouldn't say absolutely, but this has to go through not only the Finance Committee, it has to go through the Assembly, it has to go through the Senate. Before the Senate or the Assembly votes on stuff like this, the Fiscal Bureau presents them with a document of the budget and changes to the budget, so they would have a chance to look at this. And I know they're going to be getting a lot of calls from lawmakers who say, give me some more information about this plan. I want to know the details that I didn't hear at that press conference.
I want to, before we let you go, Sean, ask you kind of about the mood at the presentation here. As you mentioned, we have a current governor against a guy he ran against twice, people of both parties, budget time, things are tense. Was this, you know, singing kumbaya, high fives and hugs during this thing, or was this kind of like a tense, we hope we get this thing through sort of deal?
No high fives and hugs, Rob, but there was definitely everybody on the same page. Yeah, pretty. I guess you'd describe it as earnest. I don't know. They all seem to be very much 100% behind this in every possible term. So Tom Barrett and Scott Walker and Chris Abele and Robin Voss and Scott Fitzgerald all basically singing from the same hymnal on this one.
And you won't say that sentence many times.
You will not. No. Not on too many issues.
All right. Sean, as always, thanks a lot.
You're welcome.
That was WPR State Capitol reporter Sean Johnson talking about Governor Walker's announcement today with a crowd of people behind him there of a Milwaukee Bucks arena deal. It includes $250 million in public funding from state, the city, and the county in some cases, creatively a bit. We want to hear from you now at 800-642-1234. What do you think? Do you think the state and local governments should help pay for this Bucks arena? Are they paying enough, as this deal was just described? Do you think it would be more costly, as the governor said, to lose the team, to have it leave the state, not pay taxes here anymore, than to invest in a new arena? Is this a good use of public money? If you're in Milwaukee or in the area, how do you think it will affect the downtown? If you aren't in Milwaukee, do you take issue with state funding going to help that area? We just spoke with WPR State Capitol reporter Sean Johnson about the Milwaukee Bucks funding deal announced this afternoon of the $500 million cost of building the new arena and related facilities. Half, about $250 million, would be publicly funded from state, $80 million from the state. The rest would come from the city and the county. We want to hear from you now at 800-642-1234. The governor's case, along with the mayor, county executive, people with the team, legislative leaders, more costly to lose the team than it would be to build the new arena. Do you agree? If you're in the area, what do you think of this deal? What does it mean to you? If you're not, does state funding bother you? Call 800-642-1234 or post on the Central Time Facebook page to your calls now. Larry is with us in Waukesha County. Larry, hi.
Hi.
What do you think?
My comment is that earlier this year in the spring, the citizens of the state of Wisconsin had an opportunity for $250 million to be given to us with the casino down in Kenosha. Our governor decided that wasn't doable, but now the citizens of the state of Wisconsin are going to have to pay $250 million just for this Bucks arena. This guy speaks with forked tongue, and he says it with a straight face, like, we should just believe it. That's what I don't get.
Larry, thanks for your call. We'll go now to Brenda in Greenville. Brenda, hi.
Hi. I am not in agreement with any of the state money going towards a private business. I can't believe we're even considering it when we're defunding state parks, which also bring in tourism and money, and the state owns, but yet we're looking at giving private business where billionaires are making money off of it, money. It doesn't make any sense to me.
All right, Brenda, thanks for the call. We're getting your thoughts on the deal announced today for a new Milwaukee Bucks arena. Half of the money coming from public funding, some of that state, some county, some city. You can join in at 800-642-1234 with your reaction or post over at the Central Time Facebook page. We've got Gary with us next in Waukesha. Gary, hi.
Hi. I'm curious to know, I mean, when we did the same thing with the Bucks, or not the Bucks, with the Brewers Stadium, you know, we imposed a tax on the entire county, even though it was voted down in the two or three counties where the vote went towards. The state turned around and forced the counties to pay the tax anyways. So we're always doing the cost sharing on this stuff, but where's the revenue sharing as well? Why aren't they including in some of this? The owners profit from it. We continue to pay for it. I'm okay supporting some of this stuff because we do it with other businesses that want to locate in the area, and we give them tax breaks for a couple of years. That's fine, but there's got to be some kickback into the state residents as well. If we're footing the bill, we should be getting some of the benefit from it as well, too, not just the owners and the players.
Gary, I guess the argument from the governor today was we stand to lose money in tax and other revenue if we don't do this. That's the case they're making. Do you buy that?
Yeah, we probably would lose revenue. There's no question about it. However, you know, they're asking us to foot a lot of the bill, and we're still footing the bill for the Brewers Stadium as well. And that was supposed to end at a certain point in time, and we're still paying taxes on it. And I still have to pay high prices to take my family to go see these events. And all these guys that are, they're putting in the other half of it, they're making billions of dollars. They're some of the highest paid people in the country, and yet we're paying to foot there. Their stadiums and whatnot. You tell me any other landlord that gets told by the person that is going to rent their property or rent their building what they can do with it and how they have to do it. It doesn't work that way.
Gary, thanks a lot for the call at 800-642-1234. Clayton is with us next in Burlington. Clayton, hi.
Hi. Yeah, I would just like for somebody throughout all these months to be able to explain to myself and all the other taxpayers of the state of Wisconsin why we should have to pay for a tool for a multi-billionaire to be able to make more money and pad his pocket more. There is no reason that taxpayer should have to pay for his tools for his business. Not only that, Governor Walker has pushed this through or going to push it through, whatever. How much money is he getting put into his presidential campaign funds from this billionaire for his presidential campaign? Is that the only reason he's pushing it through?
Clayton, thanks for your call. Taking your reactions, all opposed so far, to the arena deal announced today by the governor, the mayor of Milwaukee, county executive of Milwaukee County, legislative leaders and others, team owners, on what the state, the county, and the city are going to contribute toward the funding of a Milwaukee Bucks arena. You put those together, about half is the answer. Your thoughts at 800-642-1234, or share them on the Central Time Facebook page, or tweet us at Central Time WPR. Liz next in Dodgeville on the line. Liz, hi.
Hi, I just wanted to share some more actual data about if we do lose the Bucks, what does that actually cost the state? Like how many millions of dollars? How does that affect the average taxpayer? That would be more helpful in terms of this discussion. And also, over the life of the loan, so let's say the taxpayers are putting the $250 million bill, what does that really cost? And then also, what is the profits of the owners over that time? I think it would be helpful to actually have all of the information so we can have a better opinion about it. Thank you.
Liz, thanks for the call. Something I will try to check out. The deal is still, the ink is still not dry on that announcement today. Blake next in Milwaukee. Blake, hi.
Hi. I guess I have a couple of comments. First of which, I think it's important for taxpayers to realize that the owners of the Bucks are billionaires. You're asking ordinary people to foot the cost of a billionaire's new building, which seems a little silly to me. In addition, it's important to know that the owner of the Bucks, Wesley Eden, is the majority shareholder of a property group that owns a number of derelict and falling down houses in Milwaukee, and you'd think it would be important to first clean up those properties before he comes to the city asking for money.
All right, Blake, thanks for sharing your thoughts. Steve is with us next in Waukesha County. Steve, hi.
Hello. I think it's despicable that they are cutting DNR, our schools, our DUW system, and everything else, and spending this money on a billionaire playground. I just want to say, GOP, beware. Election time is coming. Thank you.
All right, Steve, thanks for the call about the funding plan for the Bucks Arena. Still time for your thoughts at 800-642-1234. Anybody out there in favor of this idea? 800-642-1234 or post on the Central Time Facebook page. Mike is on the line next in Madison. Mike, hi.
Hi, I'd have to agree with just about every caller's opinion against the funding of Arena for the billionaires. And also have to say, if we're going to have this, I think the cost should be spread by the other counties that surround the poorer income Milwaukee County. And with that, if we're going to, you know, get some of this revenue, let's tax these rich basketball players a little bit higher in their income tax and get some of that money back to the state of Wisconsin.
All right, Mike, thanks for your call at 800-642-1234. We heard from Martha on Facebook, who agrees with most of our callers. She says, our schools being defunded, people who provide in-home care losing their pay, folks who need a hand putting food on their table, forced to do with less. But there's money for basketball. This is what's wrong, she says, with Wisconsin. Well, still time to take your thoughts on this funding plan for Milwaukee Bucks Arena at 800-642-1234. Still time to post on the Central Time Facebook page or tweet us at Central Time WPR. As we heard from reporter Sean Johnson earlier, about half of the cost of this plan will come from public funding, some of it from the state, about $80 million, some from the county, some from the city, $250 million when you add in what interest payments would be, about $400 million. This arena is not law yet. It would have to be approved by the legislature or either via joint finance or by the legislature as a whole. We'll take your calls in just a minute, 800-642-1234. And we'll be covering this issue more in the days to come, including tomorrow morning on the Week in Review on the Joy Cardine Show. We'll go now to Francis in Hudson. Francis, hi.
Well, hi, yes, I want to say I'm in favor of it. I think all of us in Wisconsin have to realize, just like every person that owns a team, are a multimillionaire. What is important to our better good, and believe it or not, it is sport. It's amazing. So you can't look at Wisconsin being in a unique situation. Look through Minnesota.
All right, Francis, you're kind of breaking up on us there. The gist, I think, was that you were in favor of this, that it brings some benefit into the state. Oh, time for one more caller, Bob in Dousman. Bob, hi.
Yeah, my comment is that there's no way that that thing is going to cost $500 million. Before they're done, it's going to be $800 million, and who's going to pay for the extra?
Yeah, the announcement today, thanks for the call, Bob. The announcement today it puts overruns on the hands of the owners, the private part of the funding as it currently stands. Well, thanks for all your calls. Keep it going online, Central Time Facebook page. Coming up, some proposed changes to Wisconsin's Family and Medical Leave Act. We'll get the details. I'm Rob Ferret. Veronica Rickard is off today. This is Central Time on the Ideas Network.